at the radio,
including our intelligence agencies, poses the most serious of dangers because our country is a battlefield.
We are at DEFCON 1.
Everybody, this is F Bill Radio for the week of May 22nd, 2005. I'm Mr. White.
Not Malice Factor.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Fantastic. Fan-fucking-tastic.
There you go.
This is great. This is the first episode ever, which is nice. We're a bi-weekly radio show that broadcasts over the internet from fbillradio.com. And we cover computers, technology, hacking, freaking, security, and the ever-present government.
And for those of you who are of the nerd culture, video games, sci-fi, and anything else that's worthy enough to be covered by us in that regard.
Yes. So, we have a few different segments on the show. We're going to do a news recap every week, and then some sort of main topic, going to, for the majority of the show, in-depth discussion. So, I guess we'll get started with the news.
That's right.
The weekly reload. Yes. That was pretty sweet.
That was sweet.
All right. First up on the agenda for this week, Ballmer claims Google will be gone in 5 years. The balls on that, man.
No, I can't really even think of what to say. Let's pull a quote from, was this Business Week Online? The hottest company right now, the one nobody thinks can do any wrong, may just be a one-hit wonder.
A one-hit wonder. You know, right now, I mean, they are the hottest company around. They are kings of search. They've done wonders for search over the years. You know, others are catching up, Yahoo. And according to Ballmer, MSN search, but I'm not going to be using MSN anytime soon, I don't think.
When's the last time you actually used MSN?
I don't think I've ever used MSN, to be honest with you. You know, honestly, before Google came around was
what
the last
was it,
time.
AOL search and Yahoo, right? Lycos. Yeah. Alta Vista, the list goes on, but I've never associated MSN with internet search engines.
Not really. I used to use Alta Vista a lot, and then I used to use Hasta La Vista .box.sk, .sk.box. I can never remember. You ever been there?
No,
I've never been there. It's good search for the dark side of the internet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's where back in the day on my 14.4 modem, I used to find text files on hacking and shit like that.
Yeah, you were using it to download porn.
You have no proof of that.
No, I don't, but... You know, this is the man who was running around stage like a fucknut.
Like a monkey let out of a cage.
Exactly. And, I mean, Ballmer talks shit all the time. But there's other... I mean, his master has him on a short leash, and I'm sure you want to talk about him next.
Yeah, this comes shortly after Gates claims that the iPod will be dying soon. You know, it just seems to me like they're taking stabs at whatever's good right now, whatever's, you know, in the public eye, and, you know, claiming that Microsoft's going to overtake it all. I mean...
Which is, that is their prerogative to say those things, but... Whether or not we actually have to believe their bullshit, that's something else entirely.
I don't know. Are these the half-hearted attempts by an empire dying? Hopefully.
But is Microsoft really an empire dying, man?
No.
Is it fair to say that? We're betraying our bias against Microsoft, in case you haven't figured that part out. Right now, even though we use Microsoft products every single day.
Yeah, we do. I don't know. I just can't believe they've just come out and said the iPod's going to die. Google's going to die in 5 years. I mean...
It's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah. It's not a one-hit wonder. They've got a lot of stuff going on, good or bad. I mean, I don't agree with them trying to sneak into everyone's lives with the Google search toolbar and... All that stuff, but privacy issues aside, they got a lot of good stuff going on.
That's right.
So, I was just amazed that these guys just stand up there and say this kind of stuff. But Ballmer did say this last week, speaking at Stanford, and claimed that Google will not be able to maintain its edge as the hottest company around. Which, that is a possibility, but to say that they're going to fail within 5 years, I mean, they just made a whole boatload of money off the IPO, and it's not going away tomorrow.
To be fair, a lot of people say the same thing about Microsoft, and they have been for how long now? 15 years, 20 years, they're still around.
But, yeah, Ballmer made these claims and then spent the rest of his time for his speech trumping how great MSN's new search features are, which are
you
the same features
them,
that
so
Google has.
Exactly.
Really. I mean, I took a look at it, and there's nothing new in there. There's nothing creative.
It. You haven't used it. I looked at MSN search and said, oh, right, and typed in google.com and went in my merry ways to find whatever I needed to find at that point. It's part of the culture now. It's ingrained in the culture. You talk about searching for stuff on the internet, you say Google it. When you got an edge like that...
When your company name becomes a noun...
Exactly.
Or a verb, I mean, it definitely... you're ingrained in the culture. I have been using Yahoo, though. I've started using that more. I've been hearing that they've been getting better, and I've been getting some good results off of it, but, you know... Using it no more than a third at a time at this point.
So in other words, Ballmer, shut the fuck up. Gates, you too. Now, what's next on the reload?
VoIP and 9/11.
Ah, yes.
Or I should say 9/11. 9/11 was a tragedy. 9/11's a service. Orders were given last Thursday by the FCC... that voice over IP providers must have full enhanced 911 service to customers within 120 days. Now, voice over IP, as I'm sure all of our intelligent listeners must know, is telephone calls over networking hardware and the internet and everything else. And VoIP services do not currently provide 911 service, which... We'll get into it in a second, but they have 120 days to provide enhanced 911. Now, enhanced 911 means that wherever someone's calling from, that 911 services can trace where the call is coming from. So, if you're VoIPing over your laptop at a Starbucks on the other side of the country from where you have your service, through your asterisk box back in your house, you know, and you dial 911, 911 is supposed to be able to find you where you're at. So,
unreasonable request by the FCC, you think?
Well, it's not unreasonable. The thing that gets me is this comes about because the chairman of the FCC has been pushing for this, and they got the proof they needed when a woman testified that her baby was choking or was sick, was dying. She had VoIP service and picked up the phone and couldn't dial 911. By the time she got to her neighbor's phone, her daughter was dead. Now, I mean, it is a tragic thing, but as long as I've been looking at VoIP services for last year, they state right out there, we do not provide 911. Now, you see unlimited long distance for $25 a month, don't read the fine print, and it really wasn't that fine of a print that they don't provide those things, and you're upset at them when you can't call 911, and that's part of the deal when you signed up for the service. So they gave the chairman of the FCC everything he needed and came up with the order, and last Thursday it was voted on and approved 4-0, which is the other thing I want to bring up, is that apparently orders handed out by the FCC only require to be voted on by 4 people and their law. To me, that's a little shady. And I don't understand why 4 people have so much power and what they can bring down, fines they can levy, and everything else. I just didn't realize that until I read this article, that I saw a 4-0 vote, and I went to look, and sure enough, that it only requires 4 people, the say of 4 people, and they can bring down whatever they want. Whatever power the FCC has, they can, you know, come down and hammer on people, companies, service providers, like all the VoIP service providers, with just 4 votes. And I don't think it should be that way. I think there should be more people that are required to have a say, to have a vote, than 4 people. What do you think about that?
Well, I revealed my opinion to you when we were discussing this before. It's nothing new that small committees, small government agencies hand down mandates like that after a discussion of only 4 people, 5 people, 9 people in the case of the United States Supreme Court. To me, that... we'll come clean with the audience right now. Mr. White is not a fan of the FCC. I'm very indifferent toward the FCC. I think they do some good. I think they do some bad, just like every other government agency out there. I don't know enough about this particular item to really share my opinion with our listeners when it comes to that. This is why I'm leaving the table to you right now.
I just don't think 4 people should have that much power. I really don't.
Okay.
I mean, I think, you know, that's a big problem I have with the government. And that ties into our main topic.
Well, we'll get to the main topic.
Yeah, but it does.
And that's definitely a point you can debate, and you can debate that without end. I'm more interested in hearing your opinion on whether or not you think that the FCC is being unreasonable.
Well, I do think that 120 days is a short time. Now, you have to realize why VoIP providers didn't give 911 service, because that's a big hit in spreading, you know, voice over IP to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, it's a knock against them not having 911, and the reason they didn't have 911 is that they have to get those services from traditional phone companies, and traditional phone companies, you know, your Bells, SBCs, AT&Ts, were not willing to provide VoIP providers with that service.
Understandably, from a competition point of view, right?
Yeah, it's pure competition. And if they wanted to, I'm sure it was at a huge cost.
Right.
Because if they were going to have this, you have to go through us.
Right.
There's nothing
right.
you can do about it. So I'm sure it's an absurd amount of money. It probably is still an absurd amount of money. I mean, you know, the FCC tells every VoIP service you have to give this in 120 days. You still have to go to traditional phone companies. You still have to pay them. And your regular old, you know, POTS phone companies have got VoIP providers by the balls with this. So who knows what they're charging for the services. And
well, the one VoIP company did reach an agreement for a 911 service.
That was Vonage and with Bell South, I think?
Yeah, Bell South and SBC. No details about the deal, but
oh, they'll never disclose the amount of money, but I mean, it's, you know, it that this right here could raise VoIP prices. It could.
Well, the that's how the cookie crumbles, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just signed up for Voice Pulse. I pay $11 a month for a DID number, direct inward dial, to get a phone number, and I get free incoming calls, and I pay 2.9 cents a minute. Outgoing, I think, prepaid deal. But I wouldn't be surprised if that jumps up just because they have to provide me 911 service.
Well, hopefully you're not choking on a Star Wars action figure one of these days and someone needs to call 911.
Well, I realize what the service can and can't do. I look at it. I don't just see $25 a month unlimited and call them up and sign up for it.
You're right, you're right. You know? So,
but the masses don't do that, so... This lady didn't do that, and she got upset because she couldn't call 911. And
well, hold on a second. Does it say who provided her? She says she's from Deltona, Florida. Who is her VoIP
Where's
provider?
Where's she from? Daytona?
Deltona.
Deltona?
Deltona, Florida.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see anywhere who provided her service, but...
Because I believe some of the order requires... VoIP carriers to explain to their customers the capabilities and limitations of the emergency response service they're getting with their internet phones. Connection to a 911 operator, for example, would not be possible for a VoIP customer if there is a power failure or loss of internet connection.
Yeah, I mean, people still have to realize that you know, your voice over IP phone is not going to work without power. And that's, you know, that's going to be the next thing, is they're going to get 911 service, and then someone's power is going to go out, and they're not going to be able to call 911, and then they're going to go up in front of the FCC and say that, you know, VoIP providers must give you battery backup service at all times, so you never lose power so you can make phone calls. Well, I mean, it's along the same lines. You know, it's along the same lines.
That'll teach people to open up spam. And their fucking Hotmail accounts now, won't it? You wouldn't want your box to get tanked by a fucking virus and not be able to call 911 when little Johnny is choking on Yoda,
well,
action master in the other fucking room.
Well, most people, their computers have nothing to do with their VoIP service. It's just, you know, their DSL modem, their cable modem, their router, and an ATA box and the regular old phone system. They're not using like Cisco VoIP phones or you know, Polycom VoIP phones. They're using ATA boxes, which are the, you know, in between a conventional phone and the router.
Well, regardless, there's got to be a way to tank those boxes somehow.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. It's called power failure.
Yeah, exactly. Next item on the reload.
Oh, this is a beaut. Right here. Government use of Wi-Fi not secure.
Fantastic.
I tell you what, I wish I lived in D.C., do some war driving down there. You know, unencrypted White House wireless network or something. You know what I mean?
That would be... I am not surprised by this at all. I'm sure you weren't surprised, our listeners weren't surprised when they... came across this article.
Yeah, it really isn't surprising, but apparently a lot of people are surprised by it. And a congressional report done by the Government Accountability Office found that only a few government agencies were secure. Now, they didn't state who they scanned, they didn't state who was secure, who wasn't secure, but a few government offices, there's a shitload of government offices down in D.C. and everywhere else across the country, and Most of them don't even have guidelines for Wi-Fi. You know, no security protocols whatsoever. Now, I mean, both you and I know WEP is dead.
Sure.
And WEP is what's used to secure wireless networks. And
in most cases, most people don't even use that. But you might as well as not even use that and not fucking deal with the 10% performance degradation just because WEP is that fucking useless.
Yeah, I mean, you still need, you know, two network cards and some software and a little bit of talent. And most people, you know, I know people that go war driving that, you know, aren't hackers, computer geeks, whatever, and hop on wide open networks and mess around with stuff. But if it's encrypted, they don't even bother touching it. So there is, you know, some point to have an encryption on there because
I'm sure
the amount of people hopping on your shit is definitely going to be reduced. But
man, we're talking about government agencies here. Mr. White and myself have gone war driving in our local area, and the things that we found were pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah, it was wonderful, actually, just to go around and own four or five towns like that on a pinch.
Yeah, there's nothing like seeing, you know, 300 unsecured networks pop up within a mile.
When you're in a fucking industrial park, no less.
Yeah.
But imagine if we had gone to a government or around a government building and, oh, what's this? State treasurer's fucking office, unencrypted. Come on.
Yeah, SSID says National Treasury on it.
What's the password? I mean, admin?
Yeah, stuff like that is you know, there should be, you would think that the government would have, you know, procedures, briefs, everything else about doing stuff like that, recommendations on setups, equipment to use, and apparently it's just not there. So,
Once again, not surprising and really fucking scary if you really want to think about it. If you really want to press that line, we're going to talk.
Yeah.
Amazing.
We should take a trip to D.C.
No, let's not even go there. Let's not even go there. Let's not have this be the first, last, and only show of At Bill Radio.
Yeah, I might have trouble getting on an airplane with a laptop, three network cards, and a 4-foot antenna. And a lighter. Anyway.
Well, that's that.
All right.
Mr. White has something that he really wants to talk about, so I'm going to let him handle this next item for you.
Yesterday, in the mail came this week's issue of Business Week. I subscribe to this magazine. I think it's a great magazine, and was just really stunned by what was on the cover. As soon as I grabbed the mail, I instantly opened it up to find the cover story. Now, right before we got on the show here, I saw a post about this on Slashdot, but the cover of the magazine says, "Hacker Hunters, an Elite Force Battles the Web's Dark Side." And there's a picture of a man in a suit flashing a gun on his hip with a hat that says FBI. Hacker Hunters. So I crack this open and I start reading it, and it's about the FBI's crew and the Secret Service teaming up to fight hackers. Alright. Now I have a few problems with the story. One is the use of the word hacker, which they, you know, use the usual media use of the word, which is someone who's committing crimes, which isn't a hacker, it's a criminal. Hackers are not criminals. Criminals are criminals. These people are chasing criminals. They're not chasing hackers. Because they commit crime on a computer, they're a hacker. Business Week puts this on the cover. It says, "Hacker Hunters sell a few extra magazines." And it just pissed me off. It pissed me off. Now, this happens all the time with the news and the use of the word hacker, so it wasn't too much of a surprise. And they went in depth talking about a bust made, I believe, last October. Some group called the Shadow Crew, whatever. wasn't that exciting. But I was pissed about the use of Hacker by a man named Brian Groh, who wrote the article. Now, I subscribe to Business Week because I think it's a very good magazine. They're usually on point with their facts, and they're pretty independent. And it, you know, the shoddy journalism really came out when there's one part in the article where they're talking about new tactics used by these so-called hackers. And the quote is, "A new strategy is to put a keylogger onto a computer." A keylogger. Keyloggers have existed since, hell, ARPANET? I mean, you know, it's a new tactic to put a keylogger on there, and it's this whole special box within the article they put this in and everything else, and they really trump it up like, we know what's going on. And it, to me...
Was this the FBI? Was this a special task force that was using these wonderful keyloggers, or were these the actual hacking crew
No,
themselves?
These are the, you know, the criminals that use keyloggers.
Oh,
that get put onto your computer by mistyping Google.com, and then they steal everything you've ever typed in and get your passwords and fucking pwn your ass. And that's the point they're making, that...
It's a new technology that hackers have been using. Just this group was able to pioneer this key logging.
That's right.
Is that... Right. I'll bring that article home and put it on my floor because my dog will need to take a shit later. Or I'll need to wipe my ass later on. You know, 10 years ago, a movie came out called Hackers. Okay. Now, I don't know about you, Mr. White, or any of our listeners out there who may call themselves hackers, but I don't go around with fucking rollerblades and a 386 laptop and hook it up to a fucking payphone.
With an active matrix screen.
With the active matrix screen and talk about how RISC architecture is going to change everything. Angelina Jolie, she's hot. But that movie, I think, really... It fucked us for 10 years.
Have
Business Week. Yeah, people don't understand what a hacker is. Or a cracker. Or a freaker. Or...
It's just, they're talking about criminals, they're not talking about hackers, they're trying to sell some magazines, and, you know, I was really surprised. Obviously, this guy didn't do their homework, Business Week didn't do their homework, and, you know, up until this point, Business Week was pretty high on my scale as far as magazines and journalism go, and really just took a knockdown.
It's going to go in the glamour bin, right? It's going to be in the same box with Cosmopolitan and Star Magazine. National Enquirer.
The author's name here is Brian Groh, and I'm going to see if I can get a phone number for him, some kind of contact, an email, and if it is a phone number, I'm going to call him, I'm going to record it, and we'll see what this guy has to say, and we can see if we can set him straight. Probably won't get a phone number, you know.
Probably won't even get an email address, because we don't have this wonderful keylogging technology that you speak of.
Man, I just wish I was lead enough to write a keylogger.
All right, next item on the reload.
Chase to use contactless credit cards. Now, this ties into the main topic again.
Which we'll get into very shortly.
What this is Chase Bank is planning on putting RFID tags into credit cards. Now, an RFID tag is a radio frequency identification tag, which basically emits a signal that has all your information on there, which can be picked up by a scanner and read your information. So your credit card won't have to get swiped. And this really makes me nervous.
Sounds convenient. Sounds like convenient technology.
It is convenient, but you got to realize that, you know, that RFID tag is putting out your information at all times, sitting in your wallet. I mean, that's what makes me nervous. And RFID tags have been cracked before. And I got a website here. I think I saw this in January of this year that this was cracked. But I dug up a site, RFIDanalysis.org, which is information on a Texas Instrument RFID tag that was cracked. If anybody wants to check that out, it's RFIDanalysis.org. So these things have already been cracked. You know, I would hope that Chase knows they've already been cracked. They've done their homework, and they're going to put these things into, you know, credit cards. And I'm sure they're not using that same one, but using another one. I mean, to me, I write CID on the back of my credit card. All right? I want someone to check my ID. For them to actually look, because most of the times they don't. They see a signature, they swipe a card. You have a stolen credit card, it's very easy to use it. It's even easier now. An RFID tag. Not to mention, you walk around the mall with a scanner. You know, if one exists, I'm not sure. Or it will, I'm sure. And just pick up credit cards. You know, 20 of them when a woman walks past with her pocketbook. You know what I mean? Places like the mall and stuff, you can brush right next to somebody. No one thinks of it. You don't have to be, you know, attempting to even get close to them. It happens, you know, all the time in malls.
Well, just make sure that there's an FBI agent with a gun standing very close to these RFID criminals.
Yeah, I do feel good that, you know, the FBI and Secret Service cyber terrorism squad extraordinaires, or whatever they're called, is going to crack down on people that are doing this.
Let's go into some small details. This is J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, the largest credit card issuer, using their so-called blink technology that can be waved in front of a special reader. I would like to know more details about how this is going to work. It says that the cards are embedded with encryption software to prevent duplication and data theft.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be encrypted, but still.
And additionally, American Express Company plans to issue its Express Pay version of the Way cards to new credit card customers next month. So does that mean if you have an American Express card, you get the Express Pay version without signing up for it, or?
They're just going to be handing these things out, I'm sure, without asking. When someone renews their credit card, gets a new one, you know, yours expires, they automatically send you a new one. If this is what they're going to be using, they're just going to give it to you. And it's a shame.
As they seek new, younger customers. In other words, people who don't have their own money, they have mom and dad's credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And they, because they don't have their own money, but they have access to someone else's credit, they buy shit on a whim. Very quickly. Sad.
I don't understand why credit cards need to be easier to use. I don't think anyone's complaining about how hard it is to buy something with a credit card.
For Christ's sake, walk into any grocery store that has its own automated teller line, or checkout line, I should say.
Yeah. You scan your own stuff. Anything. Anytime you use a credit card, it's not hard. Even if you go back to the old technology where they put your thing in that device on top of a piece of paper and they swipe that thing clunk, 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 right across it, you know, I mean, that's completely insecure because there's now carbon copies, I should say, of your credit card all over the place, but that didn't take that long.
Think about how many of these companies have your signature on file. I remember when I was first shopping with some of my relatives, when they had one of these stores where you have sign on screen, and I believe one of my relatives refused to do it and decided to pay with cash and said, "You're not going to keep my signature mm-hmm. in some computer." I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm thinking you're going to hear more about this in the coming future. I'm just waiting to hear how many Chase credit card owners are going to be fucked by this.
You'll never know. People won't know when their stuff's stolen. They won't.
Oh, they won't. They won't. But someone will release a report.
Yeah.
And then you'll send out the guys in the FBI hats with the guns and the key loggers to hunt down these RFID hacker, cracker, freaker criminals.
Unbelievable. I don't understand what Chase is thinking. I really don't. I don't understand it at all.
How that's well, it says right there secure. they want new younger customers.
Yeah.
You know, like tobacco companies want younger customers because their older customers are obviously dying out. That really doesn't have anything to do with it, but the fact that I can't pull a string of logic out of here. Maybe some of our listeners can. Maybe some of our listeners already are planning on using the technology, and God bless you guys.
Good luck with that.
Exactly.
Good luck with that. I won't be until I'm forced to.
Yeah, you got that right. We agree on one thing.
All right, Malice Factor.
All right, let's talk about E3, which was this past week.
E3. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. No, I'll save that for the next item. Really, I have to say, watching the coverage on GameSpot, IGN Network, I was pretty disappointed with what got unveiled at E3 this year. I know I'm a spoiled bitch. We got the Xbox 360 that was revealed on MTV in a brilliant marketing move a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that was pretty intelligent on their part.
The PS3, which is a fucking beast, on paper at least, the Nintendo Revolution, the Micro Game Boy. But other than that, we had Legend of Zelda, the Twilight Princess, unveiled. It looks sweet, but you're already going to buy it. I know I am.
I'm going to buy it.
If you have a GameCube, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're going to buy it. I don't need to pimp Miyamoto shit.
It just seems like Zelda looks like Lord of the Rings, but
yeah.
Other than that, I'm still gonna buy it anyway.
Of course, because it's Zelda and you have to buy it.
That's right.
Other than that, there's really not much for me to say about E3.
But the PlayStation 3 looks like a beast, huh?
It looks like a beast. I unfortunately don't have the specs with me because I support shoddy journalism like that, but. I can tell you that there's a ridiculous
graphics card,
GPU, whatever you want to call it, that's in this thing. We have quickly reached a point where it's just fucking absurd to even talk about transistors on the chip or floating point calculations. It's a really big fucking number. And we're gotten to the point now where whatever system you buy, really, it just depends on how fucking hazy you want the graphic lines to look. As it so happens, we're moving into the so-called HDTV era. I just bought a new TV. It's not HDTV, so I guess I'm fucked out of this era for the next, I don't know, 6-7 years.
Well, not really, because isn't it 2008 the date the FCC, those four people, say that every person in America has to get a new HDTV?
I don't know enough about that to make a comment.
It's something like that. I don't know if it's been pushed back again, but it's there. Four people decided everyone in America should replace their TVs.
Before you make bold announcements like that.
No, that's an old thing. It was like a 10-year deal.
I'm not sure if the FCC Jedi Council decided that everyone has to go out and buy a new HDTV. Manufacturers might have to only manufacture HDTV after that point, but
a lot of Star Wars references this week. I wonder why.
Well, E3 was pretty limp dick this time around. Hey, you know, everything is kind of limp dick when you talk about a new Star Wars movie coming out.
Yes, new Star Wars movie, Star Wars 3.
Episode 3,
I'm sorry.
Mr. White's been waiting to do that all day.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for him to do it all day.
Hopefully it sounds pretty sweet in the end. The final product.
Does. If not, we can edit it and put out a special edition version of Bill, Episode 1.
Yeah. For like the next 10 years, various box sets.
You know, I think that's probably why I thought E3 really sucked this year. Granted, I never attended E3 before, and I probably never will. Just because I was busy looking at the Star Wars coverage.
Did you go first night? Did you go at midnight?
Of course I didn't. Did you go?
No.
Exactly.
Saturday morning at 11 o'clock.
That's right. The Saturday matinees. The true Star Wars fans go to the fucking matinees because you don't want to put up with the fucking posers. You know, the people that didn't even watch the original trilogy until they had seen Phantom Menace, or they started dating someone that forced them to watch Star Wars. Kind of like, you know, the posers go at midnight. I'm sorry. If you went at midnight and you don't think you're a poser, ask yourself these following questions. Take the poser test. Did you wear a fucking costume? If you didn't wear a costume, were you drunk? Or are you under the age of 18?
Stone to the bejesus belt.
If you're any following, you're a fucking poser. Okay. But let's talk about the action movie. You think it was worth it?
I think it was worth it. It's definitely the best of the new ones, in my opinion.
Okay.
I was hoping for a little bit more. I'm sure a lot of people were. I mean, to me, of the six movies, this is the best part of the plot.
Really?
The whole thing. In my opinion. To me, if this was done the way I had envisioned it, too bad Lucas didn't contract my ass out to write these things. To me, it's just the best part. Having, you know, the coming of Darth Vader is the best part of the plot. And it's still not up to the quality of 4, 5, and 6. But it is the best of 1, 2, and 3. So I think it's worth going to see. Of course, you could download it off the internet because it was leaked on Thursday.
Yeah, this will be a controversy that we will be debating for probably months and years on end. Was it Steven Spielberg who leaked out the work prints, or was it a disgruntled Lucasfilm Limited security guard that did this, or was it the fucking MPAA itself?
Yeah, because I had heard that there's a time clock up in the corner of the screen.
Oh, there is a time clock. I've seen screenshots.
Yeah, and so it obviously came from within
Lucasfilms.
It wasn't just some dude with a video camera in Iowa or something filming in a theater at midnight. But, you know, I'm sure Lucas is going to be pissed off about this, even though he probably already made $500 million. But
oh, I'm sure he has. It was the Revenge of the Sith is now the top grossing movie, $50.5 million in one day.
Really?
Yeah,
it's impressive.
Most impressive.
Yeah, there's...
You missed my Darth Vader quote, man. should I pull some dialogue quotes right now? So it's golden gems out of episode 3, like, such as... Only the Sith deal in absolutes.
That's enough of that. That was horrible.
Better than Hayden Christian could do.
And I guess there's already rumors floating around about making the rest of them.
No, those rumors have been floating around since he made the original trilogy.
Of course. But they got fired back up again. Everyone's up in arms. And what was this with Steven Spielberg leaking it? Where did you get Steven Spielberg from?
Anyway. I don't recall where I read this, but I believe for the final scene, the final lightsaber duel between Anakin and Obi-Wan, Steven Spielberg had some sort of input into how that scene came together via teleconferencing or something of that nature. Know that
Lucas couldn't do it himself, huh?
Lucas is not a director. I'm sorry. The last couple
movies. We know he's not a writer either.
Listen, there are a few people. There are a few people in this world that love Star Wars more than we do. Genuine love, not fucking don the Yoda masks and lightsabers and show up at fucking opening night for the movie and recite dialogue. There are a lot of people that are the same way as you and I that really think that Anakin should have gone and fucking killed Jar Jar Binks episode one, not episode two or three. That said, where the fuck was I going with this?
I don't know, man.
Oh, Lucas can't direct, he can't write, he can produce, he can, he's a hell of a storyteller.
Yeah, he is.
But
yes, he is.
He really should have let someone else direct these movies. I'm sorry. Yeah. I enjoyed the movies.
They write the love scene dialogue.
Let's not even go there.
Yeah, that's a sore spot.
Yeah. Definitely not as horrible as Matrix Revolutions. Or Reloaded, for that matter. And that's a nice way to bring in the main topic that Mr. White and myself we discussed tonight. Control, right?
Control, yes. Yes, control. The main topic for this evening is the Real ID Act, which just came down. Hasn't been signed by the president yet, but was voted on by the Senate and the House and passed with both. The president endorses it, so it will be signed soon. So, this is a big one.
Let's talk about the Real ID and what it could possibly mean for the citizens of the United States and anyone else who's living in this country right now.
Well, maybe we should start with some background first.
Yeah.
Okay. Basically, the Real ID Act is a bill that was sponsored by James Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin. The bill was made by a small group of politicians in a back room somewhere in D.C., probably had their laptops on a wireless LAN, and a small group of people, they made the bill without having hearings, taking testimony, taking opinions, without any kind of input except for the so-called recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And this bill went up before the House last year, I believe it was October, on its own and was voted down. Now, this time around, it was attached to the bill for the Iraqi war and the tsunami relief, the $82 billion spending bill, and was sent through Congress attached to that. So, obviously, no one is going to vote down the money for Iraq and tsunami relief. And thus, never debated on this bill. Even though it went up before the House last year and was voted down on its own and went up again, attached to the spending bill, unchanged, and went through. A technique that was used for the Patriot Act back in 2003.
That's been used in American politics for as long as we've had a country. That type of pork barreling legislation was a major issue for giving Clinton the line item veto, which I don't believe is a power that the president has anymore.
No.
Back in the late 90s, which would allow the president to veto certain parts of a bill instead of having to sign the entire thing in the law or strike it down. It is a sneaky tactic, a dishonest tactic, I feel, in a way.
Yeah, but I think it is.
It's been like that for, as I said, as long as American politics have been doing it like this.
But, a bill that affects every single U.S. citizen and, registered immigrant that wants to drive a car. You know, made up by a handful of people in a back room and attached to something that's definitely going to pass and wholeheartedly supported by Bush because, of course, Bush stands for control and everything that's bad
and
in this world.
The dark side of the Force.
The dark side of the Force, yes. Keep on with the Star Wars references.
We have to.
Live it up for this week. All right, so what the Real ID Act does is, I actually have the bill in front of me printed out. It's about 8 pages printed. and it is officially called the Real ID Act of 2005. The important part that we're going to discuss tonight is Title II, Improved Security for Driver's Licenses and Personal Identification Cards. All right, there are actually three parts to this bill. Title I deals with illegal aliens. Title II is the driver's license thing. And Title III is border security. There's a whole bunch of things going on with Title I and the illegal immigrants thing, but that goes beyond the interest of this show. So leave that up to you to look into yourselves. But yeah, Title II here basically takes the driver's license and puts some restrictions, some requirements on it that every state must follow. This bill, once passed, has to be implemented within 3 years by every state. It's going to require stricter identification to get a driver's license, including a photo ID and your social security number. Which, it's been a while since I got a driver's license, but I don't think it required your social security number before.
I'm not too up on the driver license requirements, at least in our state.
But I know it didn't require a photo ID.
Seeing as how most people, their first photo ID is their driver's license.
It seems like the photo ID is the driver's license, which really makes this interesting is, since, you know, whenever someone asks for a photo ID, it's a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get a driver's license with a photo ID that isn't a driver's license?
Well, you could probably get a state ID issued to you and
well,
bring that in.
Yeah, state IDs exist. I mean, they look, as far as I know, in most states, the one we live in, it looks exactly like a driver's license,
exactly.
But doesn't give you driving privileges. And so am I going to have to go and pay to get a state ID, to get my photo taken on that, to then turn right around within the same office and apply for a driver's license using my state ID?
Well, you might be able to use your previous driver's license. What does it say in the House resolution?
It doesn't say much, I'll tell you that. I mean, this is only 8 pages, and I pointed that out for a reason. All right, so you will need an ID to get your driver's license. The ID will have your name, date of birth, address, which no longer can be a P.O. box, which it could be for.
Mm.
Okay? In most states, not every state. Most states it could be. A digital photograph. Yeah, the photographs that are going to be on driver's license have to be digital photographs. And a machine-readable technology. And that is a quote from the bill. It says machine-readable technology.
So, is Chase going to issue these new...
Well, part of the reason I, you know, thought we should bring up the Chase thing is because it ties right in now. Machine-readable technology can be magnetic stripes, just like I'm currently on credit cards and mm-hmm. many other things, company identification cards, access cards, stuff like that. Or it could be numerous other things, including RFID tags. Now, we already started talking about RFID tags tonight, the bad parts about RFID tags, and recently... it was put through that passports must contain RFID tags. So the government has already issued outlines for using RFID tags with passports, in passports, on passports, however you phrase that properly, I don't know. And it, within those requirements and outlines, stated that this could be used for a driver's license. Okay. Funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's kind of odd how that works, but so there are already requirements out there and outlines for procedures and the technology to use RFID tags and passports, which it seems will most likely be used for driver's licenses. Now, on that RFID tag, or I should say in the machine-readable technology, all the information that's contained on your driver's license, must be able to be read by that machine readable technology. All that information must be housed in a database that the state has. So each state is going to have a database of all the information of every person that has a driver's license. That information must be made available to all of their states. They must be able to swap information and the federal government. So once this goes through, the feds, every single state is going to have access to databases that contain all the information about every single person in this country that has a driver's license. That's scary.
That's the centralization of everyone's identity, basically.
Pretty much. In a central location. Now, that's scary for a few reasons. Okay? They're not calling this a national ID. Okay? This is a national ID.
It is.
They're taking something that was a requirement to drive an automobile and turning it into a national ID in the name of preventing terrorism. The same thing, that same excuse, same reason that's been used ever since 9/11 is that this is to prevent terrorism. This is to prevent terrorism. This is not going to prevent terrorism. I'm sorry.
I don't see how this could prevent terrorism, really. Would it be any more difficult now to obtain this type of identification or perhaps steal this kind of identification? I think it might be easier to have access to anyone's information anywhere. You wouldn't necessarily have to be in California to get someone's information anymore, right?
Right. This is really scary for a few reasons. One being that all your information is going to be accessible by the government in every single state.
Mm-hmm.
Not just yours, every single person's information. And with the laws that are in this country, they do not protect your information. They do not protect your identity. And I'm not kidding when I say that the federal government can sell your information off of your driver's license. They can sell it. There's some motherfucker that's going to call you on the phone to sell you long distance service, you know, to sell you a timeshare, to send you mail. All right. Other countries have national IDs. This is not something new. We're not the first in the world to get this. A lot of European countries especially have national IDs. And it's true. You see in the James Bond movies and everywhere else, let me see your papers type of thing. This is going to be created that you're going to have to show your national ID everywhere. And, you know, the government can sell your information. And chances are they probably will.
I would be interested in knowing how they plan on setting up this infrastructure. This is a non-funded bill, meaning that it's pretty much up to the states to pay for this initiative.
No, the states are getting money.
The states are getting money.
The states are getting money. See, that's one of the stipulations, is that states do not have to participate in this.
Oh.
Okay. Unless they want money.
I see.
So, to get money, you have to participate. Participation means you're getting money. So, I mean, there are huge
costs.
For
the program?
Yeah, for the program, for everything else. I mean, it's stated in there. I forget exactly how it's worded, but you don't have to participate. States do not have to participate, but they're going to. They're tying their hands. They're just putting in the bill so it doesn't look as bad as it is.
Well, I have a press release from the National Governors Association. Obviously, the NGA is opposed, like many other groups, and not just Mr. White and myself here, are opposed to the Real ID program, in which they state, "Governors share Congress's concern for increasing the security and integrity of driver's license and state identification cards. However, several of the requirements included in the emergency supplemental particularly those having to do with verification of documents used to acquire an ID, were either technologically or fiscally prohibitive. Technologically or fiscally prohibitive. As governors evaluate and review the implications of the unfunded federal mandates imposed by the Real ID, they encourage the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to draw upon the expertise and perspective of governors to develop mutually agreed upon regulations that can truly help create a more secure America. Is this the old states' rights argument coming into the forefront again, or?
Could be. It could be. So, all your information is shared, can be sold without your knowledge by the federal government, and if they do use RFID tags, again, your information is going to be transmitted out there. And you're looking at a scenario between this and your Chase credit card where you're checking out at Borders, and you're just standing there, and they're going to pick up your credit card, and then they're going to pick up your ID, your driver's license, and see the two names match, and check you out, and you're just going to have to stand there. I mean, to me, that's absurd.
Well, and you better not ever buy another issue of 2600 at Borders, won't you?
don't worry.
Put down that copy of the Gorilla Foco that you picked up.
You know that I'm sure that the guy in the cover of Business Week is tracking us as we speak. But
it's
you know,
parked right outside
with the car running this whole time. That goes without saying. But
Real ID is really something that should not have been passed, and it's a sign of the times. Really,
it is. I mean, we're, you know, more and more stuff is coming down the pipeline in the name of 9/11 and terrorism, and it's really absurd. I mean, it's putting in place, you know, what that small clique of people in the government wanted to do for a long time, and you know, sticking it to us now. I mean, you're walking through an airport and they're tracking you off of your driver's license in your wallet. I mean, when this comes down. Because, I mean, this is going to be law. I'll tell you what. My driver's license is going to be sitting in a sleeve of tinfoil. Because every single federal building, airport, and everything else, they could be tracking you while you're walking around. And
you better leave your wallet at home when you go war drive.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. The other thing that's disturbing about this is the bill is so vague. This is what I brought up before with the bill being 8 pages long. It's so vague that, like, it states in the bill, like, the machine-readable technology will be determined and approved by the Secretary of Homeland Security. That sole person, not even the President of the United States, can say, no, don't do that. Obviously, there still is influence there. That goes without saying. But the ultimate decision is not, again, not made by committees, hearings, anything else, and can be changed on a whim by the Secretary of Homeland Security. And it's fucking ridiculous that one person in a position has that much power. You know, that person, this act is passed, can determine what type of technology is used in a national ID card. And then tomorrow morning, change his mind.
Mr. White is definitely not a monarchist, just so you people know.
Yeah, it's. The whole thing is disturbing. Very, very disturbing that we're going to have a national ID. And it's even more disturbing if, you know, they do use RFID tags. And it looks that way. I mean, it's already been outlined by the feds to use it in passports, you know. And I don't object to using it so much in passports. I mean, passports
are one thing. You don't walk around with your passport.
Exactly,
on you.
Exactly. You know, it really. You know, I mean, the other thing, like part of the illegal alien thing in Title I that I was talking about before, is that illegal aliens can't get driver's licenses anymore. where in some cases they can now. And to me, that's not a security thing. You're even, you know, to have illegal aliens.
It's a bureaucratic issue.
Yeah, still driving around, except now there's no driver's license for them. I mean,
they're still going to be driving around in those 20-year-old caravans that they love to drive around in.
Yeah, I mean, now you're just going to have them driving without a driver's license. How is that a security thing? How? How did the five people that made this bill figure that that is a security bonus? I mean, national IDs, for one, do nothing for security.
No, they don't, and it's a really... I believe, was it Representative Sensenbrenner who passed this?
Sensenbrenner,
who he was quoted as saying, "The national security is something that we can't, you know." I believe he said, "The extra time waiting in line to get a new driver's license is a small price to pay for our national security." I'm not concerned about standing in line an extra 15 minutes in hell, I mean the DMV, to get a new driver's license. My concern here is you have my social security number, any other records that would appear. For Christ's sakes, how many fucking times I've been audited this year on my fucking driver's license or my national ID. I don't want that shit being on there. I don't see how that protects this country, my life, your life, anyone else that lives in the United States.
It doesn't. And the problem is the masses don't, they don't realize it.
The masses don't care. The masses don't even know that this bill was passed.
No.
And I'm not talking about real ID. I'm talking about the fucking spending bill. Let alone this.
Maybe someone had CNN on the day it went through.
They
mentioned that. Okay, we got another $82 billion. Going down the pipe to this stuff, which part of it's going to tsunami relief. Who knows what the breakdown is. That's a good thing, you know. But more money to Iraq.
Most people saw that news item, and the number $82 billion comes up every year, it seems, when we're talking about voting even more money to prosecute that war and our other initiatives abroad. And they fucking changed the channel to watch American Idol or the fucking baseball game or whatever else was going on. And now we're just on the soapbox, but...
Yeah, this is a little bit beyond the scope of the show.
This is beyond the scope of the show, but...
You know, national IDs do not make things more secure. What they do is allow the feds to track us. That's it. They're tracking us. Law-abiding, U.S., born and raised citizens, they're tracking us. It's in the name of terrorism, in the name of 9/11, handful of people in the back room in Washington make this up, attach it to a bill that's not going to get denied, and we have a national ID.
Well, there is the pulse of resistance. Obviously, the National Governors Association plan on challenging this. There are other groups that will challenge the constitutionality of this. Hey, that's why we have that small group of individuals on the Supreme Court. And another item that we won't discuss right now.
I mean, I hope it goes.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
It's going to be a long 3 years.
Definitely.
Seeing
and there's
what
not going to be
this.
A new Star Wars movie at the end of that long 3 years, so.
No, there's not. So.
Well, that's all we have for today's show.
All right.
The inaugural F-Bill radio show. Episode 1.
Yeah. All right.
So
this is, you just said F-Bill Radio, episode 1. You can catch us. Our website is fbillradio.com.
Pretty
welcome.
Soon, you'll be able to interact with us. We appreciate your feedback. your comments, your death threats.
Yeah, anything you want to send us. Radio@fphilradio.com is the email. I mean, we want interaction. We want to be able to read emails on the air, talk about them. So send us whatever
what
you got.
Help us help you.
We
really got
IRC channel set up on Dalnet, which is #FPhil for all you IRC junkies. You know, if we get some people listening and stuff, we'll probably be on there while we're doing the show.
Well, we'll attempt to be on there while we're doing the show.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes. And we actually have a voicemail number. So you call us, leave us a voicemail at 202-460-7262. That's 202-460-7262. And 202 is actually a Washington, D.C. number, if you didn't know that. But, yeah, leave us a voicemail. Get on the show that way. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Pick us up off of fphilradio.com.
So, for Mr. White, this is Malice Factor. See ya, motherfuckers.
Later.